Holy shit, everyone listening. Alex is here. I was just talking to Julia about how their book comes out on your birthday.
I know we didn't tell Julia that.
Had no idea.
I did. So Julia's book we're putting out on my birthday so I can remember, and then we also did not tell Pilar this, but Pilar's book comes out on Todd Helton's birthday because it's like the only other birthday I know. So, I guess when you run a press, you get to do stupid things like that.
Welcome to I'm a Writer, but my guest today is Julia Hannafin and her publisher, Alex Higley of Great Place Books. Born and raised in Berkeley, Julia Hannafin now lives in Los Angeles. They have written episodes for television. Cascade is her debut novel. Welcome, Julia. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
This is really, really fun. Like I was telling Julia earlier, I tore through this book. I absolutely loved it. I was like, thrilled at times and titillated at times. Why does that word feel so disgusting to say? But I was disgustingly titillated and I gasped at one point. I'm sure you can guess when I gasped. We can talk about that. But before we really get into it, if you wouldn't mind just reading to us a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I'll just read, I think, from the beginning. There is a starfish that sees with the surface of its body. The brittle star doesn't have eyes defined by little globes cased in eyelids. Its whole body sees. To see itself, then, is just to interact with the world, to move through it. I wish I could live this way. The boat rocks up and down. I slide from white plastic seat to boat floor, where I grip the metal above me. Staring through the railing into the ocean. The water makes infinite patterns, waves, impossibly coordinated lines of blue, gray, white, and brown. I can still see Erin standing in the kitchen, frozen, her arm bent, her hand holding her cell phone inches away from her ear. She couldn't say anything to me at first. The house was quiet, still, all music subtracted. I was supposed to go to college and med school to become a surgeon so I could pick things apart with steady hands. Blake wanted it for me as badly as I wanted it for myself. When Blake died, I couldn't keep walking in the direction that kept me on her map. I had to go somewhere else. On the boat, Michael's face suddenly looms over me, concerned, dirty blonde hair going wild past the edges of his hat, and I immediately see my ex-boyfriend Julian's face in his, the sharp dark eyes, the long eyelashes, the gap between the two front teeth. Before I notice the wrinkles that crease out to his temples, the crooked, maybe broken nose, the sun-damaged skin. It's like I can see how Julian's going to age, his body fast-forwarded into the future, standing in front of me. 27 miles didn't sound like too many. My ears start to heat up, my nose dripping down my chin. Michael reaches for the straps of my life jacket and tugs, testing their tightness. He yanks the carabiner that's attached to my middle, that runs a line from me to the boat so I don't go overboard. Are you good? He yells over the wind and the engine. Our destination is the Farallon Islands, 27 miles past San Francisco. You can see them on a clear day from Berkeley, all their islands making one crunchy line on the horizon. Aaron used to think it was good luck spotting them, proof of the universe's benevolent will. I promised I'd take care of you, Michael says. I first met Michael when I picked Julian up from his house in the Oakland Hills, and he invited me inside. The house was nice, a craftsman perched atop too many stairs. Strange sculptures in the corners, brightly colored lumps of clay. There were framed photos of water on the walls. On the fridge, some of family. We sat in the den, where Julian and his dad traded off inserting records into the record player, wandering into the corner, lining up the grooves, then muttering a few words about what they'd like to put on next. Michael assembled a cheese plate. I didn't eat anything until he nudged a plate toward me again and said that from the cheese board, you have to try one. Julian wanted to drink a beer, but his dad gave him a look. Keep it outside the house. Berkeley parents were often like this, cultured, smart, interesting, self-pronounced weirdos with beautiful houses. I'd never believed in them fully. The dads were too self-referential. They read the news too much and they wanted to teach you about Roman history or sustainable fruit farming. Michael was different. I wanted to hear everything about his life and what he thought of the world. I'd touch all the details of his house and ask about them so I could prompt him to keep talking. I complimented the water portraits and found out Michael was a scientist and a researcher. Worked with the water a long time, he said, as if the ocean were a colleague. Julian scowled.
Well, first of all, thank you for teaching me how to pronounce carabiner, because I've been mispronouncing that
Oh,
my whole life.
I might have the wrong one that I'm attached to, so.
No, I like it. And I've been going around saying Farallon Islands, like Jimmy Farallon or something.
I would like that too.
And I already forgot how you pronounced it, so I'll just depend on you. But there's that clue there that I totally forgot about where Julian wants to drink a beer and Michael tells him to keep it outside, which it's like, oh, of course a dad would be like, not in my presence, you know, that's not appropriate. But we learn later, you know, why he wouldn't want alcohol around him in the house. I thought that was really cool. It's all right there.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
I love a book that has a setting. And, you know, like maybe it's just because I watched just recently watched True Detective, where they're in Alaska, right? Like the newest True Detective, they're in Alaska, which I couldn't get enough of those details. I just felt like I was especially primed for a book set in the Farallon Islands. I did
Yes.
it. Okay.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about your experience with, because you grew up in Berkeley.
Yes.
So did you, have you, I'm sure you visited the Farallon Islands and did some research. Can you talk a little bit about that, your history with those islands?
Yeah, for sure. So I had only seen them from a distance growing up in Berkeley. It's like on a really, really clear day, you can see them if you're really high up, kind of in the Berkeley Hills. But they're a protector, like they're protected nature preserves. So you're not allowed to go onto the islands unless you're a scientist. So
Oh
when
my
I was
gosh.
starting to write about a scientist who worked with water and large animals, a cousin of mine suggested the Farallones as a setting. So I watched as many YouTube videos as I could, and I read as many books as I could. And then when I had a draft and I was revising it, I was like, I gotta go there, because what if I got something terribly wrong? And so you can't go on to the islands proper, but you can take a whale watching boat that goes really close. So I got my girlfriend to come with me, and we took a boat that got like within 20 feet of the islands, and I got to
Gosh.
look at it and really feel like I hadn't gotten it wrong. Like I had seen this place in my head through my research that I was in all of a sudden, like walking through a set. It was cool.
So are those houses, so they stay in one of the houses and the other house is kind of falling down, and then there's the blind. Are those the structures that are there?
Yes, and I think actually both houses are in use now,
Okay.
which was a detail that I learned in my research, was I was like, I like one. I want to keep it as one not being in use. But in real life, both are used for researchers to live in.
And is that kind of what you were looking at in the YouTubes, where they're like tours of the houses?
Yes, it was like really, it was easy to get sort of like bird's eye views of what the islands look like, but like actually what people are experiencing when they're walking around, what a sort of day-to-day life was harder. So I just a lot of YouTube rabbit holes that I finally found someone walking really thoroughly through the islands. This is what this side looks like. This is what that side looked like. And I mean, that was a joyous day of my research, finding that
Wow.
YouTube video.
You should link your book in their comments.
100%. I'm like, you
It
guys did this.
was us and me, us
Have a
and
piece of
you.
this.
That I never considered the fact that bird shit could smell. I just like I don't, you know, like I don't experience the smell of it so much as like the goopiness of it, and the fact that like that's such a smell on this island because there's so many birds and they're, you know, pooping everywhere. I never considered that. Is that something that you made up or is that real?
It's real. Yeah. It's like it will in all, I guess this was another detail that I had read about. That was like the first thing that people described when they got into the islands for the first time, was like this overwhelming smell and overwhelming chatter, because there are just thousands and thousands of birds. And then, yeah, I think I've experienced like one bird pooping on me one time. I don't know this huge volume experience. And then I went there and I was like, whoa, it's stinky. It's loud. It's like all of your senses are sort of overwhelmed.
Yeah, no way to get any sort of quiet, hard to think
Yeah.
straight, which is such an interesting setting for the mindset of Lydia, because Lydia has just experienced the death of one of her moms, and sort of like the repeated disappearance of that mom before that, and kind of like the severing of her relationship with Julian, and so she goes to this place where ostensibly she doesn't have to experience those things, but at the same time, that's nothing but experience, right? Like it's just like constant beating experience coming at her.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like wanting an experience of grief and avoidance that like it isn't actually quiet, it's not still, it's like something else rushes in and fills your whole sensorial body.
Yeah, I can
Yeah, like
totally relate
requires
to.
something of you.
Yes,
Yeah.
exactly. I can
Yeah,
totally
yeah.
relate to something like I have to go somewhere where like I'm just not myself, right? Like I'm completely taken away from that, right? So that I can, I don't know, find a way back in some way.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to me that she's a character that's at the start of her adulthood. Can you talk a little bit about that choice?
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe that comes from a personal place. Like one of my moms passed from breast cancer when I was 19. And so it felt like this real, you're sort of a foot into adulthood and into a conception of yourself past your parents, but then you're not quite at a level of having an adult relationship with them yet. And so this I think it was a particular time to lose a parent in that it like you part of you gets sort of stuck in being a kid, and then part of you gets pushed way forward into a world in which you don't have that parent anymore. So I think that kind of push-pull and wanting to construct oneself and not look, but having to look informed Lydia.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. Was it surprising for you? Was it healing for you? I mean, I hate ever considering the fact that like we write to heal. It doesn't have to be like that. But it was there, did anything come up for you that was surprising as you were sort of, I don't know, drawing from that as you wrote Lydia?
I know. I think, excuse me, I think I do. I know the sort of therapeutic part of writing. I do think it is therapeutic for me. I know,
Yeah.
unfortunately, fortunately. Well, I thought about, one of my mom who passed on, her father was an alcoholic, who died of like an alcoholism with like a withdrawal induced heart attack when she was pregnant with me.
Oh my God.
And so I thought a lot about, I think I was thinking about my other mom a little bit more when I was writing the book, my mom Audrey, but as I was in the middle of it, I was like, oh, maybe I'm trying to understand Dawn in a way that I didn't think of. And then I'm trying to understand her experience of having an addict or an alcoholic parent, and how that could ripple through.
Yeah. No, I think maybe this is, I don't know. I think sometimes people, it gets a bad rap if you're writing from life, right? Like we want fiction writers to have these like amazing imaginations and everything's just like pulled whole cloth from these imaginations and like and maybe it's like the way that society treats auto fiction or something. This isn't auto fiction, but like I feel like there's this sense of like, well, I'm still a valid fiction writer, even though some of this came from my life. And of course it does, right? Like there's emotion in everything we write, and there's setting in everything we write, and relationships. And like that's kind of, like the bare minimum of what we pull from life, in addition to these larger things. I love kind of just saying, like, yes, this was something that I was processing as I was writing. I think that's important for a lot of people to understand that it's okay to do,
Yeah, and like finding fictional facts to, I don't know, it's like make true feelings in a
Yes.
retelling of something,
Yes. Totally. It's like sometimes you can't get to the thing that you're trying to think through the like in the same way that you experienced it, right? Like you have to, I guess in the same way that Lydia's like, I have to go to these islands and smell bird shit and like watch a whale attack a shark and that I just have to, because like trying to grieve in this other way isn't working. Or like even being in that kind of mode isn't working. We also have Alex here, who is Julia's publisher. Alex Higley, who co-runs Great Place Books with Emily Adrian and Monica Woods. Welcome, Alex. Alex, can you talk a little bit about what you thought when you first encountered Julia's manuscript?
Yeah, of course. Real quick though, I wanted to chime in on what you were just talking about because to me, I feel like it's a little bit of a straw man argument from people who aren't readers or writers to say that writers that a readership wants fiction that's invented whole cloth. Like I know Lindsay, that's not what you want. I know Julia, that's not what you want. That's not like a criteria that people who are in books actually use. And I think if I actually think about my favorite fiction, the stuff that resonates with me the most, there is always a small, obvious connection to the writer's real life. And then where the divergence occurs is unknown to me. And that lends greatly to the mystery and the power of the piece. And that has been my experience with Julia's work over the course of the past year or so, or however long it's been. And so often, recently, as Julia has been doing more interviews and speaking about the process, I have been continually surprised because I do not know Julia personally as well, as I know their work right now. And so to hear the overlap between the truth and the fiction and the truth in their life has been amazing, but also surprising and a kind of like ticking off of a rubric of like, yep, it's real. Nope, it is meaningless to me. And I think meaningless to most readers, actually. So yeah, I just wanted to say that because I totally agree with you, Lindsay, that that argument like exists, but I don't think it's real. I don't really think that it's based in anything. Okay, rant over. We were so lucky to get Julia's manuscript from someone you've interviewed, Lindsay. Justin Taylor sent us the manuscript. We Emily and I had reached out to a number of friends, and just as we were looking to acquire our first novel, we had already acquired Locke's World at this time, but had not published it yet. And we wanted to publish a novel. Emily and I both love novels, maybe chiefly, and wanted to find the book that was going to be our first with Great Place Books. And we knew pretty quickly, we knew, maybe 10 pages in that, okay. And really, you know immediately that you're dealing with a real writer, someone who is really trying to do the thing, and it's not a gimmick, and there's not kind of an avoidance of actually writing a novel, which I feel like you encounter a lot. Anyone who has read submissions, whether it's just short stories for a lit mag or maybe works in publishing, indie publishing, big publishing, whatever, so often the submissions you encounter are doing everything they can do except being a collection of poems, a collection of short stories, or a novel. They're avoiding actually doing the thing, in my opinion. And I feel
Wait,
like
I want to hear you talk a little bit more about that. How avoiding it, how like it's not fully formed, or it's what is it?
yes, yeah, not fully formed, or you can tell that the writer is not even interested in engaging with getting their best work on the page. And I mean that apart from stylistic decisions, and I mean it more rooted in maybe something a little bit less effable. It's a feeling. And I think, you pick up certain work and you're like, oh, okay, this is going for it. Or this is, you can tell that there's something, there's a motor here, or there's an effort here. And that was the feeling that we had when we read Julia's work. So we had never met Julia, never spoken with Julia. And so it was a very fun, there's like a fun feeling out process where you're like, okay, like, who's gonna like blink first? Are we legit? Are you legit? And it's so fun and scary. And so, yeah, that's how we initially encountered Julia's work. And then, Julia, do you remember when that was? I actually don't remember when we first got in touch.
I think it was like the end of summer 2022.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. And then we've been working on the book pretty steadily since then. And yeah, it's been so, it was so fun at the, you know, at the beginning of this episode to hear Julia read the opening, because the final form of the book still doesn't feel like the one that I am most familiar with. And I know you guys as writers like know the feeling of going through edits and thinking about like, okay, what has been excised? What is, you know, what is new here when you kind of like get to that final form? But I had never like gone the distance from an editorial perspective on a novel where you are thinking about like, okay, let's like maybe shift this a little bit here, shift this a little bit here, and yet not been central in the actual work of making those changes. And so it's such a weird half feeling of like knowing the work intimately and yet not being responsible for it. It's very strange and amazing. So it was so fun to hear Julia read the opening, because I can remember what it used to be and what it is now. And it's just, it's an amazing feeling to see what Julia has done with this book.
Gavel bang. Julia, what was it like? Did was it were you being edited by both Alex and Emily? So what was it like working with Great Place on this?
Yeah, oh my gosh, it was wonderful. I got they gave me sort of a synthesized letter about the sort of main revisions that they wanted, or main, I love, I feel like all the notes that Alex and Emily gave me were notes that then I was trusted to carry out in the way that I wanted to decide to carry them out. So it's interesting. It's like, I feel like what Alex is describing, I feel it on the other end. They are like reaching in and poking at something and then being like, you get to fix it however you want, or not however you want, but you get to take that, to the end. And so yeah, it was a bunch of back and forth of taking sort of making a revision plan, doing that first pass, and them really in the weeds, like, different notes, a note from Alex Higley, a note from Emily Adrian. Sometimes they would agree on things, sometimes there would be like a little disagreement, which is fun. And
Mom and
also
dad are
because
fighting.
I don't, didn't know them personally, don't know them outside of this, like, fun to get a sense of their personalities and their joint taste, but also different micro decisions that they were making. And yeah, just went back and forth on drafts that way until we got to the end. And the opening was a big thing that we worked on kind of continually. So
And why is that?
think it was a little hard. Like, I think figuring out like how much Lydia knows about what she's doing at the beginning, about why she's going on this trip, about what she thinks she's embarking upon. I'm just not sure I was super clear on that at the beginning. And I like knew that there was a change that occurs once she gets there, but her sort of impetus for getting there, I think I had to get really clear on. And something that I really learned in the revision process was to not be afraid of clarity, that there's mystery and withholding in the novel, but there also needs to be clarity at certain moments, and finding that through the revision process, I think, made the larger narrative so much stronger.
That's so interesting, because I feel like that's an impulse I have as well, to where it's like, like I have to keep some of, like I have to, you're gonna have to figure this out, man, or it means whatever, man, because it makes me feel more, I don't know what it is. I guess it's just hard, I guess, because then you have to make the decision, right? Like you have to make the kinds of decisions that Alex is talking about people not making, and why their book doesn't have the voice or the motor. I think the motor is what you said, Alex. Like, then you have to really kind of make those decisions, and those de decisions affect other things. And so, if you can kind of keep it in this like breezy, foggy thing, and like kind of skate by on that, then these other decisions don't have to be made, or you don't have to, I don't know, maybe that's what it is.
think
But I
that is
have the
what it
same,
is.
yeah, it's the same impulse of like clarity. Oh no.
But it's like, it's not like a lesson you learn. It's not like, got it. Like the, I think that impetus to not, as you're saying, Lindsay, like make decisions, which is related to what Julie's saying about like clarity. Like, this is this person's name. This is where they live. This is, you know, to not just like get some of that is rooted in allowing yourself space when really what the reader wants a lot of times, and not, you know, I don't want to speak in absolutes here, but what often the reader wants is just to be in lockstep with you and understand this is where we are, this is where we are. And as writers, I feel like a lot of times it's a realization process. And again, not one that is like made and then lasts. You have to, like, I have to constantly remind myself this. You, I lost my train of thought, but you make the decision, and then you realize that that small decision, whether it be a name, whether it be a place, whether it be some kind of clear indicator, has nothing to do with the actual stuff of the novel. It just is a signpost, and you're not really like blowing your load early. It is like you're just getting them in. You're just getting them in. Like, keep going. And so I feel like realizing that you have more stuff to say and more important stuff to say, and the stuff of the story is not a person's name or whatever. It's just, you need the reader to even be on the ride with you is hard. It's so hard because, like you're saying, it's easier to just be like, you know, try and hide in style. And it's an impulse that I share with both of you.
I mean, I still get people being like, where does Hot Springs Drive take place?
You're like, motherfucker, it's called Hot Springs Drive.
Yeah, it takes place on Hot Springs Drive. Okay.
Yeah.
Done.
God.
Yeah, I still, because those are the kinds of, and I can remember like laboring over like just atmospheric details, like what is the weather like? Like what kind of trees are there? And just being like, I don't fucking know. This is so painful. And but it does, it takes a good editor, I would say, to be like, just choose one, like it'll be fine, because everything else that's going on is what's really powering it. But people, and I want it as I'm reading, I want to know, like, like, are we in the red chair now, or are we on the sofa? Like, are we what? Like, so I don't know what it is. It's like letting go, maybe, but let go, I guess. I want to read Great Place Books' mission. Is it mission statement or
Yeah.
just description of what they do? Because I love it so much. Great Place Books publishes literary fiction, nonfiction, poetry, and work in translation. Our mission is to be a home for rigorous, weird, beautiful books and their readers. These books are imperiled by the stratification and commercialization of publishing. Against the grain of the industry and the times, we aim to support the careers of idiosyncratic and alluring writers whose voice might otherwise be lost. That is so fucking cool. That is so good. Julia, how does it feel to be one of those idiosyncratic writers?
It feels great. I feel honored. It's
Yes.
such a cool mission and so cool to be included in that.
We feel honored. I mean, Julia has raised our game. It's not the other way around at all. So we definitely, Emily and I have said repeatedly how lucky we are that this is our first novel, and it feels exactly right. It's just, yeah, absolutely.
Let's get back to that novel
Yes.
and the choices that you made, Julia, as you wrote it. Because as I said earlier, it's a novel that sort of defies category, never mind. It defies being in a category. And because it's, like I said, at times, like, it's really sad, it's poignant, it's beautiful, and then all of a sudden it's terrifying, or something happens that makes me gasp. In a sexual way. And I want to kind of hear about like how it unfolded for you. You know, like how were you sort of trusting it as it came along? You know, like how were you shaping it in revision? What was that like?
Well, I think research helped me a lot with what literally happens in the research that happens on the island in the book. I got to work with a great ecologist and biologist based out of Northern Florida, Dr. Adam Rosenblatt, who has works with alligators and has been on like great white shark tagging expeditions. And so my big question, I knew that I wanted there to be some sort of parallel between the devolving sort of relationships on the island and a devolving or disintegrating research happening on the island, but I didn't know what the impact of a sort of big animal interaction could be. And so I talked to him, and his first, like I was like, okay, if this thing that I had read about, which is orcas attacking great white sharks by these islands, I know that the sharks leave. Like, what happens next? Like, what happens to the island? What impacts the prey underneath those sharks? And he was like, well, it would impact the way that the like seals and prey parent. It's obvious. And I was like, that's great to hear. And I think just following, like continuing to follow the thematic parallels, having the connection between this confusion around parenting, wanting someone to have parented you in a different way, understanding that you're reliving something. I think that the parallels really helped me. And revising was a lot about clarity and about tracking when Lydia knows what, the gasp that you're talking about. In an earlier draft, I had it that was always a mystery. It was like, who does she sleep with? We don't know, which that didn't work. And that was a note that Justin Taylor actually gave me early on in reading a draft, where he was like, the reader is going to want to know. You can't leave it hanging in this way. And so just continuing to fill those details out and decide when to give that clarity. That's a rambling answer, but that's part of things that I'm thinking about in their vision.
No, because I think that's perfect, but I will actually say that I gasped at the kiss.
Ooh.
I did
Oh,
not gasp at
nice.
the but
Great.
there's a scene.
Oh, I thought you were talking about what Julia thought you were talking about the whole
Yeah.
time.
I guess I'm a prude, but
I always have thought of you that way.
there's a mo okay, I, spoiler, okay, but like also there's like lots that happen after this. But she's on the boat with Michael, who's the father of her ex-boyfriend and who's leading this research expedition to the islands. And she has this like curiosity about him as a father, but also like an attraction to him. And she's trying to like understand that. And it's like getting more complicated and maybe at the same time more clear, like a clear path for her. And she kisses him on the boat. It's just her and him on the boat. And she kisses him. And I was like, oh. I just never thought. And I also thought maybe part of the gasp is that I thought he would be like, no. You're a kid. I get it, whatever. But it just like happens. And like, and then you're kind of going into the next chapter, like, oh my God, is he also attracted to her? This young woman who like was previously dating his son, and like, what's up with him? It kind of made me start thinking about him more, right? Like, what's going on with his decision-making skills, which is great plot-wise,
I love the
because
way that impacts that next chapter.
yes,
It's just like,
exactly.
it, yeah.
But it's a choice that she makes, right? Like later she's drunk, and so we can't say like she's like consciously choosing to do what she does, even though she does choose it in her impaired state. But this is like she's not drunk. He might be drunk, right? That's kind of implied. But she makes this really bold choice to kiss him, and there's so much in that action because she is grieving. She has lost a parent. He, like, she kind of at certain points is like, "What's it like to have a dad?" You know, and like he's a dad of someone that she was close to, so she's looking at him in that way. And so there's a lot behind it. It feels really loaded. And then yeah, it kind of sets things up, as they go. And I just thought, what a brilliant way of kind of examining, like, not only your perception as a young woman when you're just starting your adulthood, you think that you see things very clearly, but you You don't, right? Like you're still learning so much. Your brain hasn't fully developed. Okay. Like, so she's got that like perception that she's dealing with. She's in a new place. And grief also can derange your perception, right? Like, and so all these things like happening behind her decision to kiss him was just like groundbreaking for me. Was the kiss always there, or is that something that came like as you were revising and plotting?
Yeah, the kiss was always there. The kiss always felt like something, and I kept going back and forth. Right, I love what you said about like grief deranges the way you're perceiving the world too, and to have all these characters have their perception sort of altered in certain ways, you know, by alcoholism, by grief, by you know, by yeah, grief and grief in a personal way, in a larger way of this research is falling apart, and I might not get to be on this island again. But I never wanted her to seem so crazy, you know, like I
Yeah.
think there were drafts of it where it seemed like she was really living in a delusion. And I think part of her perception is deluded, but I think part she's experiencing something real. Someone else is not responding to her kiss in the way, right, that one would think a boss, a superior, someone who was, you know, the father of her ex-boyfriend should respond. And so, you know, that kind of like pause or like someone's not getting me back to reality. So you get to continue living in this strange new space, you know, like your obsession or your crush does not get corrected. And so I kept wanting those states to extend long enough, you know. So the kiss was always there. I really wanted the kiss to be real, something that she has agency over, something that is shared even in a fucked up way.
It's so good. I mean, I marked it because I can remember I was sitting in my chair over there and I just went, oh. I was like, I gotta talk to her about that.
Yay.
I don't know. Because up until then, you're not sure what she's actually looking for out of Michael, you know, like, and she's not sure. And it's so great.
And I think there's loss too in like, you know, pursuing someone in actually the wrong way for you, you know? Like I don't think
Yes.
it's best for Lydia to pursue him in that way. I think he could have potentially been a complicated but positive figure for her, and then
Right.
she pursues it in this extra way. Almost doesn't even want to be received like that, but does. And so, yeah, following that complicated mix.
And it's so relatable because I can remember being a 19-year-old girl,
Yeah.
you know, and just being like, touch me, everyone, you know, like, oh, that's not appropriate. But still.
Yeah, relatable.
I want to know how you knew you had gotten to the right ending. And Alex, how that felt for you guys on the editing side. Like, oh, this is it. Was it always this ending? Or how did you get there?
I'm curious what Alex's experience of it is. I definitely I there was always a version of the jumping into the water that was there from pretty early on, and that section like didn't and how it's written didn't get changed very much, I don't think. But I really was not sure, and a few early readers of mine were like, should we follow her back? Like, should we see her more on land? And so, yeah, I remember I asked Justin about that actually. I was like, I'm not sure. I'm about to turn in this revision. I'm not sure if the ending should be the way it is. And I sort of talked him through it, and he affirmed that I was in the right I was I th that I was in the right place. So I think leaving everything not resolved, someone coming back from a trip, irrevocably changed, but also not in some sort of neat way that solves everything. That felt important to me.
There's that, and Alex, I want to hear from you too, but I just want to
Yeah.
call out there's that. So she jumps in the water, which is a no-no because it's really not safe to swim there, and there's seals everywhere, sea lions everywhere, and rocks, and it's waves that want to dash your head against the rocks. And but she does it. She makes this choice, and she's under there for 4 minutes, I think. And she encounters her mom who's died, Blake. And
Yes.
so in the very end, she talks about that her mother's face, Blake's face, is water sealed onto her own face. And so that felt like really important. That felt like crucial for the book to end was like, yeah, she's like not 100%, right? Like she's still really grieving and like has to kind of process what happened in a lot of ways. But that encounter with Blake and then understanding that like she has Blake with her, it felt really special and really important and beautiful. Like it brought tears to my eyes. But Alex, how was it for you? Like, were you guys like, hell yeah, this is it?
Yeah, my experience is close to what Julia just described, in that the maybe there are small changes in the last 30 pages I can remember that were made, but the large kind of sweep of the ending is pretty much unchanged. I mean, tightened up a little bit, but nothing. No huge changes.
Yeah, there's like a sudden call out to the blind that's on the island, which I thought was a really, like, it describes what a blind is. And then as she's kind of beholding her house, her childhood home, you know, that she's going back to, she's thinking about the sharks. And that's kind of the note that it ends on. And yeah, what a great way to just sort of engender in the reader, like, this feeling that, like, this person is just going to keep living like this beyond this book, you know, like this was a major thing in her life at this age, but like life continues on and we don't have access to that, you know? So it's like it felt good, you know?
I love that way of describing, yeah, sort of optimism in the ending or a continuation. And yeah, that image of the face sort of sealing onto hers. I feel like I get my best, spookiest stuff from dreams. I don't know if you guys relate to that at all. I've always been a really vivid dreamer. And so that I had the sort of ghost experience, dream experience where a face like smushed onto mine a few years ago. And it,
Whoa.
yeah, it's very scary. I've had weird, anyway, that
So
always felt
wait,
like
is
an
it a bad
image.
thing? Was I completely wrong? Has she
No,
lost, like, is
no.
it okay?
I think it's good. I'm always thinking about like, ghosts, sometimes ghost experiences being things that feel scary in the moment, but then really connect you to something beautiful and larger. And so the fear is not even necessarily a bad thing. It's just reminding you of like the grandness or the significance or something. And so that sealed image always felt really important to me. And that being not the mom that carried her, but her having this like physical connection on her face of someone being able to, in her mind, see her mom when she looked at her. That always felt super important to me. So I love hearing you talk about that detail.
That's beautiful. Yeah, she talks about how someone, one of her friends, was like, "Well, at least you still have the mom that carried you, and that's special, you know." And it's like, oh, that's fucked up to say to someone, you know, like
Yeah.
you mean well, but
Yeah.
that sucks.
Yeah. I remember being in college, and there was like a I went to Columbia, and so I was in like a taxi, and the taxi driver I was really a big oversharer. I might still be an oversharer sometimes, but when I was 19 and grieving, I was like letting it rip everywhere. And
Good.
so I was talking to his cab driver, and she was like, oh, I'm so sorry, but like you've got another mom. I was like, yeah, I do.
Were like, oh, I feel better now.
You
You
fixed it.
turned it
Jeez.
around.
God.
I mean, I think of like the dumb shit that I've said to people because I feel like I want to say something, but I don't know, you know, like I want to show that like I'm with you and it just comes out all wrong, you know, like maybe that was the cab driver being like, scanning, scanning, scanning. You have a mom still, you know?
Can offer this to
Yeah. I love an oversharer, by the way. That's like, as Alex can tell you, that's like
God.
my soulmate.
Oh.
Well, what about like, you're a TV writer. What, like, how did, what did this give you that TV writing doesn't give you, or what did it take away from you that TV writing doesn't
What
take?
did we take away?
Did always know take out they didn't take away anything from me. They gave me lots of stuff. Yeah, definitely it does give me something different than TV writing. I mean, it's just it feels so personal, and you have so much more control, and you can dream big and describe anything you want for someone else to live in a scene in their head. Whereas TV writing, you got to think about the budget. You got to think about and you do sort of have to think about, creating stories that won't then blow stories for the future. It's like everything is like on these little wheels that have to keep going. So you can't do something so crazy that then messes up that character's journey in the next episode or the next season. So it's a lot of it's very sort of mathematic thinking, I feel like, almost in terms of like plot and character. Whereas in a book, you can dream big, and it's personal, it's quiet, and you let a few people into the process, but you don't have to be like making decisions in the moment with a group of a bunch of other people, which was really strange and hard at first, I was like, writing is such an intimate thing, it's so vulnerable. And then you're doing it basically in conversation with 10 people who had been on a bunch of other shows, and it was an experience.
And then someone comes through and deletes every line you wrote. You're like, that's fine.
Yes.
That's
Oh my
okay.
God. You really get rewritten and you're like, ah, okay, I can learn something from that.
I'm
Oh
just
my
a
God.
body in a room. I'm just a body in a room.
Yeah.
Do you like writing for television?
I do. I mean, I think the social part of it is really fun. It's like you get to talk with people all day long about story. A big, there's a lot of room for overshares. You hear a lot of like personal stories that get smushed into narrative somehow. You get to like experience people in a sort of intense story-based way, which I think is really fun. So
Maybe we need
that
to do
part of it I
like
really like.
collaborative novel writing, you know, just like people in a room writing a novel.
That sounds awful.
It sounds awful, but also I would do it if the pay was like TV writing pay.
Oh yeah, I mean, are you
Yeah.
kidding me?
Like
Oh
you
yeah,
could
if we're
put
talking
like
about
a
getting paid.
sure. Like if you put a wild cam on us and it was like a reality show and we were like writing a novel together and people could see how like deranged writers get when they're writing novels,
It would be
especially
so
together.
bad. It'd be so bad. Because I think the hard part about even like, and I mean, I know you guys have had this with, in all sorts of different ways, but it's like, it's hard to start speaking the same language. Like when you, and, or even understanding like what kind of language is okay with a certain writer. And that, I don't really feel like that can even happen in conversation. Like, it's a little bit like the ghost experience that Julie was describing. Like, it has to happen, and you have to like think about like, okay, yes, all right. At least for me, but yeah.
I once watched, I think I brought this up before. I once, like, Matt Bell did a thing where you could sign up and you could log into his Google Doc and watch him edit in live
Oh my
time,
God.
like completely rewrite a story. Like, and I always thought that I loved it. I thought it was really cool because, like, you kind of see, like, oh, okay, he's making like the same kind of thing mistakes that I make, or like, oh, I see where he tightened up this here, like, and it makes you kind of. That's the kind of thing that
Why would he do that?
I don't, I mean, he's always coming up with ideas. This was years ago. This was a
That's
lot of years ago.
ridiculous.
I loved it. Well, what is next for you, Julia? This book comes out on April 16th, Alex Higley's birthday,
Oh God, no,
as the
no.
world knows.
Just April 16th.
Yes.
And are you doing some events for it?
Yes, we'll do. There'll be a reading at Skylight, Skylight Books in Los Angeles on Thursday, May 2nd,
Okay.
7 p.m. And then one reading with Justin Taylor at Powell's the following week, May 10th.
Friend of the pod,
End of the
Justin
pod.
Taylor. Nice. Oh, that's great. Those are two great bookstores.
Yeah, I live pretty close to Skylight now, so and it's a bookstore I've gone, to for years living in LA. So I feel very super excited about Paul's and very it feels very special to get to do it at Skylight.
So
Is
cool.
your name going to be on the marquee at Powell's? It probably will, right?
It better
Yes.
be.
Oh my God.
You get to take that iconic photo of you under the marquee.
Those pictures rule. They rule. I love seeing those pictures. That
I
would
gotta
be
do it. Oh,
awesome.
that's amazing.
Yes. And
Yeah.
Alex,
I'm
what's
all,
next
yeah.
for Great Place?
What's next for Great Place? We are publishing a translation August 20th, by Pilar Frail. Translated by Lizzie Davis, called Euphoria Days. Pilar is a Spanish novelist. This is her first novel published in English. She's published shorter work in the Paris Review, and she's fairly well known over in Spain, but we were lucky enough to snag this book. It is a wild, modern, very like sexy, chaotic novel that takes place in Madrid. One of those ones where you have to read it to get an understanding. The log line, any log line that I could come up with would not do it justice. I will just say that read it. So that's coming out soon. And then we've acquired another book that we haven't announced yet, and we are acquiring others. We're in the process of getting some more books, get it done out our next season.
Do you guys let people submit, or you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what we I mean, this is so we have a contact form on the website, and anybody can contact us at any time through the contact form. We don't respond unless we're interested. So it's always open. Anybody can query us at any time. And if we're interested, we'll get in touch with you. And if we're not, we won't. And so we keep it open in that way. And we would like people to be, agented, unagented, whatever, get in touch with us for sure. But we just don't have time to respond individually to every single one, because you would be shocked. Truly, you would be shocked, even at our level, how many submissions we get and how many emails we get. And we are, we're small potatoes here, and it is like unbelievable the amount of email. I cannot, well, I have some idea now. People who work in New York publishing and Big Five publishing, or even big indie publishing, I can't, the amount of email is like ridiculous. I mean, you even know for the show, Lindsay, the amount of emails you get, like, holy shit, it's
It's a
stupid.
lot. It's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's nowhere near what you're getting, but it's a lot. And psychologically, just knowing there's emails in your email is so,
It's a
it can
weird
be.
feeling.
Yeah. I learned a lot from Alex, actually, because Alex used to handle our email back when he was part of the show, and he just was like very efficient. And like I would always feel very emotional, like I need to like make everyone feel seen. And he's just, like he just prioritized, like he taught me a lot. So thank you.
Sure.
But they can go to greatplacebooks.com to
Yeah.
submit and to order
Yes.
Cascade.
Yes, it's available in all the, normal places online, anywhere you want to get books. But if you order it from us, that's kind of extra cool for us, because then we get to handle the shipping through our distributor, and we get a sense of where our readers are, which is really cool. And, planning future events for Julia, kind of getting a sense of, like, although like the entire city of LA has pre-ordered her book, outside of LA, it's fun to see, like, oh, there's a pocket of people here who really love Cascade or whatever. That is a really neat part of our end of it. So by all means, if you want to get the book, get it wherever you want, but we would love it if you ordered it from us.
Amazing. Well, thank you both for coming on. This has been a treat. Julia,
No
this book is
problem.
incredible. People will love it. Go get it. Go get it from your favorite indie bookstore or order it from greatplacebooks.com. And thank you so much, Alex. I know everyone's going to be so happy to hear your voice. Keep up with Alex at greatplacebooks.com. His book comes out in January?
So close. February 25th,
February.
2025. Cover reveal end of this month.
Oh, okay. Cover
Ooh.
reveal end of this month. Go to Alex's socials. He's on the socials. I actually meant that as a joke, but you are on the socials.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're on.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much, Lindsay. This is so fun. So
Alex,
honored.
this is
Yeah.
for you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.